DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be once again joined by Vivian Doudreau, who is an editor for Ignatius Press. Over the last 30 years, she's written news articles, book reviews, and columns for various Catholic media, including the National Catholic Register and the Catholic San Francisco. With Vivian Doudreau, we go inside the pages of Mariel Trevor's Shadows and Images, published by Ignatius Press. Vivian, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
I can't wait to talk about Shadows and Images. It really showcases the talent of a Catholic author that many of us, again, are not aware of.
Yes, Mariel Trevor was really an accomplished writer and highly acclaimed in Britain, which is where she was from. But a lot of Americans are not as familiar with her work, apart from the children's books by her that have been brought back into print by Bethlehem Books. Mariel Trevor wrote books both for adults and children, and so some people have come to know her through her children's books, which are also wonderful. But she also wrote nonfiction, the acclaimed biography of Blessed John Newman, which is the subject matter of this novel.
And that's important to remember. I mean, she's not unlike another English author, a contemporary maybe, Carol Houselander, who wrote children's books but also had adult writings.
And in both these women, you see a tremendous spiritual depth. Mariel Trevor, another convert. What is about these converts? But tremendous spiritual depth and understanding, and yet the ability to communicate it in a very accessible way by telling a good story.
Yeah, and they do have tremendous stories to tell. I mean, Mariel Trevor, again, she was a convert. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it towards the 1950s after the World War and after England had been pummeled during that time?
It was after World War II, because during the war, or shortly thereafter, she spent some time in Italy doing kind of what we call the Peace Corps for Americans. Britain had a similar kind of post-war rebuilding projects and so on, and she spent time in Italy, and as a result, she entered into the Catholic culture that was as natural to people as the grass growing. It was just the way they lived their life. It was the way they saw the world. And Mariel Trevor was very moved by this. And when she returned to England, then really studied the church, and the rest is history, as they say.
Well, let's talk about Shadows and Images. Okay, and this is the woman who wrote the award-winning biography of John Cardinal Newman, now blessed.
Right, and in fact, she had special access to a lot of his private letters. She actually lived in the place where Newman lived during a significant chapter in his life, had access to his private library and to his private correspondence. And so in this novel, a lot of the words that come out of Newman's mouth in the dialogue and in the are words that she lifted word for word out of his writings. Some published, but also others not yet published, just things that she had access to during the research for his biography.
That's what makes this novel so thrilling. It's because, I mean, how often do we have where the author has written a biography and then chooses to use the subject in a marvelous setting in a novel?
I think that's pretty uncommon, probably. I think it's probably pretty rare.
You could sit there and you feel assured that what's happening in the novel isn't contrived.
Correct.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You feel like you are really being introduced to a person that Mariel Trevor knew personally. And because of the amount of time she spent devoting herself to studying the life of Newman and his works, she really came to know him as if she had met him in the flesh, you know? And then that familiarity with him as a person is what she brings to the novel. This is not just a cameo appearance by a famous person or a famous person being just kind of fit into a story, remolded to fit the storyline. No, she got to know this man, and then she wanted to come up with a way to tell a story that could introduce other people to this man. And she chose to do it in this very interpersonal way. In other words, it's not, here's John Newman at his study, and here's John Newman saying the Mass, and here's John Newman, you know, with a headache. No, this is, here's John Newman, the way he would be amongst his friends and the people who knew him. This is how he would have interacted with them. This is how they would have seen him and experienced him. And so she did this in this relational way by inventing some of these other characters. Some of the other characters in the novel are make-believe, so to speak, fictional characters, but the way they relate to Newman is very much based in the reality of the man.
It's set back in the early 1800s, of course, in the countryside near Oxford. So you get a sense of what it would have been like to have actually been in the situation of the young John Newman, a brilliant Anglican priest scholar.
Right. He's a rising star in the Church of England. And let's not forget, he himself is a convert, right? So we have a convert writing about this woman, Clem, who has a conversion, but also Newman himself is a convert. So, but Newman, at the point we first meet him in the story, he is a rising star in the Church of England. And a lot of people have pinned a lot of hopes on him because he's a brilliant mind. He's a sincerely holy person. He's seeking God with all of his mind and all of his heart and all of his soul. You know, that's the whole passion of his life. Now, while this period in Oxford, we are also meeting some other real-life characters who interacted with Newman in this time in his life, other Anglican clergymen who were very important in the Oxford movement. One thing to remember about the Oxford movement is that it was a movement inside the Church of England. You know, because so many converts came out of it, we can kind of think that the Oxford movement was somehow something that happened in the Catholic Church. No, the Oxford movement was something that happened in the Anglican Church, which was Anglican clergymen learning more about the fathers of the church, the history of the church, and trying to reconcile in their own minds, how do we define what the authority of the church is? Because at the same time, what are we seeing? We're seeing the Industrial Revolution. We're seeing rationalism. We're seeing, you know, this love affair with Enlightenment thinking and science, all this progress. You know, who needs the church? What's the church for? Isn't that just superstition and backwardness? And so there's this need to feel like the church has to get up with the times on one hand. Then we have also evangelicalism in the Church of England. You know, people saying all of this high-minded stuff is leading us away from the gospel, leading us away from Jesus. We need simple faith and simple worship and none of this, you know, highbrow stuff. So there's all this going on in Christianity in England at this time. And interestingly, at this time, the Catholic Church still does not have its full religious freedom yet. It actually happens in the course of the story that the first Bishop of England, since prior to the Reformation, is allowed to be installed in England. And that's Bishop Wiseman, and he makes an appearance in this story. So you're kind of in this period of history in this story that's really a lot going on. And yet, you know, you're seeing it through the eyes of this young woman who is in this environment. Why? Because she went to school with Newman's sister. That's how she kind of gets segue into this group of people. And then she ends up being kind of a governess or to a fellow who's an Anglican clergyman. You know, how Trevor manages to insert, if you will, this rather ordinary woman into these extraordinary events that are going on is very cleverly done.
The thing is, Clem's story on its own, I think, is an extraordinary one. And I love how that moment when she, some would say, fell from grace. I would say she fell into grace in this relationship. And I don't think we're giving away anything when we say that she ends up marrying a Catholic.
Right.
With a reputation that kind of scandalizes.
Yes.
And then she goes off to Italy for an elopement, and she converts to the Catholic faith in that.
There's nothing in this novel that is scandalous or untoward. In fact, you can let your teenage girls read this novel without a moment's hesitation.
And please do encourage that.
And encourage them to read it, yes. But having said that, I think, Trevor, what is she saying in having this very straight-laced, upstanding young lady fall for this Catholic with this reputation. Now, it's the scandal of falling for the church. Because if you think about it, that was scandalous to become a Catholic in England at this time. The Catholic mm-hmm. Church, people knew it by reputation, not by what it really was. Mm-hmm. They had all these prejudices against it based on, oh, it's superstition, oh, it's popery, oh, it's idolatry, oh, they worship Mary, oh, they're cannibals, oh, they're all the things that were said about the Catholic Church, none of it true, mm-hmm. gave the Church this sullied reputation as if she were some kind of fallen woman. In fact, Luther even called her the Whore of Babylon, and that epithet has stuck. Some Protestants still call the Church the Whore of Babylon. Mm-hmm. So by creating this character, Augustine, who courts Clem, he has this reputation. But as we go through the story, we realize that the reputation is not based in reality. Mm-hmm. And isn't that true with what a lot of people think about the Catholic Church? It's not based in reality. It's a reputation that's a holdover from all of the slander against it that dates back to the Reformation. Mm-hmm. So she did something very clever, I think, with that character. He represents more than himself, I think.
And her growth in the church, I mean, in her faith, is something I think over time and an understanding and appreciation of it, I think that's a very real experience. And just when they return, having to live in a society where that is that outcast. But you're also, let's not forget John Newman. He is, at this time as well, struggling with his identity.
Yes, John Newman goes through tremendous trials of first the scandal of becoming a Catholic, mm-hmm. and then even during his ministry in the Catholic Church, constantly being misunderstood. So Catholics thinking he's not Catholic enough, Protestants thinking he's gone over the edge, very few people taking the time and trouble to understand. And this was so painful to him that he was only trying to follow the truth as it was revealed to him. And to be faithful to that, he wasn't trying to create a sensation. He wasn't trying to create scandal. He wasn't trying. He was simply trying to find the truth and cling to it. And yet, what a price he pays for this all his life long. So that, and this brings me to another point that is interesting in all of Trevor's works, including her children's novels. Trevor always elevates for us, for our admiration, what I would call the wounded hero. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very profound, her very profound understanding of Christ. He is the one who suffers for love. He is the one who suffers wounds for our sake. Mm-hmm. And he's risen in glory, yes, and we can all hope that we'll rise with him, but we don't get to the glory without the suffering. And the suffering is not a meaningless thing. It is a redemptive thing and a powerful thing for those who, you know, will pick up their cross. Mm-hmm. And in all of Trevor's stories, she has these wounded heroes who I think are Christ figures for us. And then this sort of band of friends or band of fellowship that gathers around this person. Well, isn't that the church? Isn't that a little microcosm of the church? We little band of disciples and followers, weak as we are, we gravitate in love toward this one who's loved us and suffered to love us. And now we just, you know, pick up our little crosses and follow. You know, it's a really beautiful image of the church that I think she deeply understands, and deeply understands that this has to be a lived reality in the life of the Christian.
Hmm. You know, and it's also wonderful that she chose, again, she offered us the biography that is a magnificent read on its own. But then to give us Newman's life in this context in the novel, he is an incredible intellect, just brilliant in the ability to be able to articulate basic truths of the faith. But he also had a tremendous heart. It's a man who would say, heart knows heart. He really is very Christ-like. This gentle, brilliant man. Wow, what a figure.
He is a figure. And he's really a figure for our time, because the people who have confidence in the truth are not afraid of intellectual inquiry. You know, one of the things that caused conflict, after becoming a Catholic, Newman wanted the Catholic upper class to send their sons to Oxford for an Oxford education. Mm-hmm. And he really believed that, A, they needed that education to do to in society what their station called of them. But a lot of Catholics were very afraid of this. They were afraid that if Catholic sons went to Oxford, that they would, you know, encounter ideas contrary to the faith, that they would encounter modernism and all these things. And Newman really believed that the church should be unafraid because mm-hmm. reason and faith do not contradict each other. So we should be unafraid of intellectual inquiry. And, you know, when someone is not afraid of that, they also have the ability to listen to someone who opposes them in a completely sort of open and charitable way. And if you think about it, the people who get all, you know, angry and upset and defensive and everything are people who don't have as good a case. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to protect them from maybe being found to be in error. Mm-hmm. But when you're confident that, you know, you're confident there's such a thing as truth and we have the equipment to find it, and God is generous in giving it. If you go through life like that, what are you afraid of?
That's right.
You're not afraid of people who oppose you or disagree with you or argue with you. You, in fact, you welcome it. And Newman was one of those kind of people. He welcomed, I'm happy to argue with you. I'm happy to sit down and have a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. Are you happy to have a conversation with me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, So that gives them that ability to both have that rigor of mind and yet that very open, accessible, I can talk to anyone kind of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare combination.
It really is. And again, this would be brought by Mariel Trevor. And I hope out there that are listening, find her children's books. You know, those who are homeschooling, they should be a staple on your reading list.
Oh, yes. Yes, by all means, I highly recommend The Rose Round for middle school age and up readers. That's by Mariel Trevor. And then she's got this delightful series called the Lechtenstein Chronicles, mm-hmm. which are set in the revolutionary period in Europe in the mid-19th century. You know, Les Miserables, you know, mm-hmm. it's that era, not the French Revolution, later when the barricades in the streets and the uprisings. She has stories set at that time, which is very exciting. Sun Slower, Sun Faster, where these children travel in time and mm-hmm. see different ages of the church. That my kids loved these books and read them multiple times. So yes, she's definitely one to look up on the children's side.
We went through the Lichtenstein Chronicles, and the Crystal Snowstorm, and Following the Phoenix, and The Rose and the Crown, and those are all, they're just outstanding. She's not a writer to be missed. I think we've said this before, Vivian. I mean, there are people out there who will, I have to have something to read. I got it, and they'll go in and they'll buy a hardcover book that's sitting on a kiosk in a bookstore because it's new, and they'll actually spend that money on that, and they'll find that it's an absolute waste of time, given the fact that there are real gems like this out there that will engage you. They have to just get to their local Catholic bookstore and to track them down sometimes, but they're worth it.
Right. Well, so many books that are produced are just meant to amuse you. They're not really meant to help you think about your own life and let God's grace into whatever corners needs to be let in. You know, another thing that Trevor talks about in all of her novels is family conflict. You know, mm-hmm. Individuals have real conflicts and real misunderstandings and real hurts in their families.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not something to gloss over as if it doesn't happen or gloss over as if it only happens to some. No, it happens to everyone. It's universal. And for an author to be able to get you to look at that and think about that in a way that's actually healing. It makes you feel better. It makes you feel better to see, oh, look at that. They, you know, that mother-daughter, they've got a misunderstanding too. And look how that gets resolved in the end. And doesn't that give you consolation? Doesn't that give you hope? I guess mm-hmm. that's the thing that's missing from so much modern fiction. it's hopeless that you feel when you're done reading it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you find that in today's movies too. When a film like No Country for Old Men, when you watch that and it wins an Academy Award, and it leaves you dry, I mean, yes, and feeling sick, that we would lift up those kind of films. It's indicative. We see it in literature. You see it in music. You can see it in so many other areas. What does that say about the culture that's producing those pieces?
And some of these things that win awards and so forth, they actually do have artistic merit. But they can't give what they don't have. The people making those films can't give what they don't have. Mm-hmm. And if they are lacking in hope, if all they see is evil and human failure and human misery, well, it is all there. It is all there. Mm-hmm. But the Christian message is something different. The Christian message is, and out of this can come good. Out of this can come redemption. And that's why we have hope. To find an artist who can take that hope into her storytelling, as Mariel Trevor does, this is not easy to do. It's much easier to just leave people in misery, because that's kind of that's the starting point. It's easy to leave them off there at the next station, just mm-hmm. further down the track of hopelessness, just further down at the next station. No, how about somebody who can say, you know, there's another track, go mm-hmm. into another place. Mm-hmm. You can get on it.
Right.
Now you're, okay, I can get through another day now.
Praise God.
I can make sense out of this, or at least I have some hope that there's some sense to be made out of this. Even if in the moment I can't understand what's going on in my life or whatever, I have hope that God knows me, God loves me, God has a plan for me, God intends to save me. All I gotta do is let him do that. I mean, when you read something that can do that for you, it's doing much more than just amusing you or entertaining you, you know, or it's doing something else. And to find authors who are capable of this, because, you know, if you start trying to do it, and it's easy to end up sounding sentimental or schmaltzy or trite. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, it's easy for you to say, you know, we've come across stuff like that in Christian art, haven't we, where mm-hmm. we just feel, well, that's not satisfying because it doesn't seem real. Doesn't sound real. Doesn't feel real. Those are not real people. Mm-hmm. But when you can find a novelist who creates people and you feel like they're real people like you, with conflicts and troubles and sufferings like you have, and yet something good somehow seems to be coming from it, then you can look at your own life with new eyes and mm-hmm. find an author who can do that for you. Well, that's so worth it, and makes all the other stuff look like just very trivial at the least, and maybe even worse than that at the worst.
Yeah, we're always looking for that Catholic author. And I think she's yet another great example of somebody who just writes. She's not trying to write the Catholic novel. She's trying to write a good novel. But her Catholic values come out in the work.
Right. Well, you have to first be able to tell a good story.
Exactly.
And if you can't do that, you know, you can be the greatest Catholic in the world, but if you don't know how to tell a story, you're just not cut out to write a Catholic novel.
Exactly.
But if you can tell a good story and create believable characters and come up with a plot, things have got to happen, you know, and at the same time reveal something about how you've come to understand reality because you have faith and hope in God, then that's a beautiful thing.
Would you say redemption is the key? That in many of those works, there's an element of redemption somehow.
Redemption's always the key, because we all are going to trip and fall. There's mm-hmm. there's just no getting around the fact that we're all going to trip and fall. The whole purpose of the Catholic Church, I like to say to my kids, it's just one big reclamation project. It's not a club for the people who are already all polished up and looking good. It's about, we're coming into the church broken and maimed and harmed and wounded and by sin, ours and others and the world. And Jesus is saying to us, all is not lost.
Mm-hmm.
There's something more powerful than sin and death, and it's me.
Wow.
That's what the church is. There's something more powerful than sin and death. Sin, everybody's going to experience it. Death, everyone's going to experience it. Is there something else? Yes, there's something else. That something else is that God loves you so much that he took that whole burden on himself, died with it, and now rose above it. And he's going to take you with him. Get on his escalator.
Amen.
Yeah.
Get on it
and
now.
So, and a novelist who can put that into a novel, obviously not in the way that I just did, and it's all hidden. It's hidden in the reality that's being lived that you're reading about. And yet you realize they're on the up escalator, and I can get on it too.
Mm-hmm.
I get that image, you know, from Thérèse of Lisieux, because the elevator was just invented in France in the century that she was living in.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts in Story of a Soul Somewhere or something, if I could just get on the up elevator to sanctity. And I thought, honey, you are so on that up elevator.
That's right.
Compared to the rest of us. But still, you know, it's a cute image, you know, that that God's doing the heavy lifting. That's the good news. God is doing the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I mean, she is helping, her example has helped so many to get on that up escalator.
Yeah.
I mean, just in her desire and her, you know, just the honest way in which she witnessed to her faith. In the same way that Mariel Trevor has done that with her writing.
There really is, in Mariel Trevor's writing, all of it, a little way spirituality, if that's what you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
A little way spirituality, meaning everyone can be holy. Everyone can let God do the heavy lifting. That's what it means by the little way. I'm not by myself. What am I? I'm a wife. I'm a mother. I work. I pay bills. I'm raising kids. I'm trying to paint the house, fix the roof. I mean, I'm doing all these mundane things. Who am I? I'm no great saint. I'm no great hero. I'm just little me.
Mm-hmm.
And the genius of St. Therese is, that's right, you're just little you. But guess what? God is God.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just do all those little things that you do every day and do them with great love and give them to God, guess what? He'll do all the heavy lifting.
I think Newman would agree with that.
Definitely, Newman would have agreed with it, and so would these characters that Trevor invented, and so would Trevor herself. They get it about what being a human being really is. These are not cardboard saints. These are real people who put their trust in God.
Oh, beautiful. Vivian, it's always a delight to talk with you about books. I'd say big thumbs up on Shadows and Images, wouldn't you?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Vivian Dudreau, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
With Vivian Dudreau, we've gone inside the pages of Mariel Trevor's Shadows and Images. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to Ignatius.com, the website for its publisher, Ignatius Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.